Technorama episode 645, completely full, just half with liquid and half with air. Hey, welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, hey, welcome. Welcome. We appreciate it. This is a new discovery for you. Uncharted waters, new frontiers.
Just give us a chance.
Yeah, you have to listen to more than just the first 30 seconds to make it count. Okay, thank you very much. And if you're returning, well, you know, usher those new people in, make sure they get a good seat, shake their hands at the door, give them a $5
high five.
Over the internet. My name is Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, and joining me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing well. Trying to stay cool. It's getting a little warm. Not as bad as in some places like you live in.
I like it here. I'm going for a swim after we do this recording.
I bet you are. So what's the temperature of the day?
112. It's going to be cooling down to 99 and chance of rain later this week. There's your Phoenix forecast.
Our old buddy Kevin Devin had posted a screenshot of his a thermostat app, and it said the thermostat is off. It said 91 degrees. The heat is on. It's like, it's like it thought the heat was on.
I feel
on.
Like we're doing a weather forecast now. Your Skywatch weather scan for Phoenix and vicinity is 112. Cooling down to 99 during the week with a chance of rain. That's rare in the Phoenix area. It's just hot, hot, hot out there. Woohoo!
Remember the internet weather report or the internet traffic report?
Oh, yeah.
That was funny. You should pull that up.
Right now?
Yeah.
No. I'd have to go digging through the file system. All right. Yeah. We have some feedback. We have some listener comments for you from last week.
What?
Yeah. Let's go get our comments.
Letters.
Bring up those links.
Oh, we got letters.
We have more links. I have to click through links.
Reach right in and pull it out.
Those letters. I love those letters. Let's find out what you got to say.
Oh boy.
Mailman, mail today.
All right, we asked you last week, what is the worst season of a good show? And we got some things that I kind of frankly expected. I'm glad you people came through for us. Gary Lindro says, the current season of The Flash.
Yeah, it's kind of fallen flat for me too, and
I'd
love The Flash.
Say it fell flat years ago, but okay.
No, it was good. I think this year, a lot of it had to do with COVID because they had to change. They ended the season early, and then they had to kind of wrap it up in the first two or three episodes mm-hmm. of this season, and that was kind of disjointed, but forgivable because of circumstances, and it just. I don't feel like it coerced, you know, got back together.
The Flash can't outrun COVID.
No.
All right. What do you have from the Technorama chat?
Well, let's see. John Miller Jr. also said the Flash. Gary Lindro said season 5 of Babylon 5.
That's what Sean Brockman said, too.
Yeah. Did you watch Babylon 5?
Did watch Babylon 5.
Would you agree with that
assessment? I thought it wrapped up nicely. I wouldn't call that, I don't know. I think the first season was a little hard to get through because they were still doing a lot of setup. And and everybody told me before I watched Babylon 5, is like, okay, you just have to get through season 1, then it'll get better. Like, that's not a good way to get somebody to watch a show.
That's what happened. That's the conversation you have about TNG.
Well,
the first two seasons and it gets a lot better.
And you can't skip season 1 because it's all set up. It's like you won't know the characters or how they got where they are. It's like, okay.
Here we go. Depends on the show. Here you go. Star Trek, NG.
Mm-hmm.
The first season was painful to watch at times and improved greatly later. Star Trek Enterprise got harder to watch, mainly due to plot focus in its last season. That was Mike Robison.
Steve London says Stargate 1 season 9, and I believe that was the last season. It was either 9 or 10. He said plunged straight into rock bottom and started digging. Episode 3 season 9 to be precise. Hallowed are the Ori. Yeah, right. Or season 2 of Firefly, which was the one that never came.
that season sucked.
I wasn't quite sure when SG-1 switched from I'm getting old and forgetting names, but when Ben Browder came on from mm-hmm. Farscape, and then Claudia Black came on from Farscape, and I went, what the heck? And actually it was actually pretty good. It wasn't Farscape remade. I thought it was fun. I thought they did a nice transition for SG-1, but that's just me. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion.
Oh, and our buddy, Brian Parker, we know from Dragon Con.
Yep.
He says season 8 of That 70s Show, aside from the absence of Eric and Kelso, there was just no reason for the gang to be hanging out in Foreman's basement.
That's just kind of creepy now. hey, what are you all doing down here? We sent you home last season.
That's right.
John Kratzer says, any current DC show, all have gone too far now.
Yeah, I think, at least the ones on CW, I assume that's what he's talking about. Because they
say years
kind of falling apart. Now, I'll say Legends Tomorrow is just, I haven't seen this current season, so I won't say about that. But it's been crazy enough where it just kind of is in its own thing. But
reboot.
Oh, no, I'm enjoying Superman. Superman and Lois.
All right. I haven't watched that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are those all still on CW?
Yes.
Okay. That's probably why I'm not seeing it.
Yeah. Superman and Lois, I think, is pretty good. So it's a little different. Not terribly different, but it's got some different qualities about that are different from a normal Superman story.
There are plenty of other shows that have gone too far and should have been canceled years ago. We did that discussion once several years ago. I think my top contender was The Simpsons. It should have been stopped.
Now it's just what do you call it? I guess it's just it's a evergreen property. It just keeps on going.
No. Not really.
But now you want to...
It's the rabbit. Energizer rabbit.
Well, I would argue The Simpsons went from a show you wanted to watch to a show you want to see how it's going to end. So just kind of hang out for the end. Got to see how it wraps up.
I'd be curious to see what their ratings numbers are compared to, say, 20 years ago.
I bet there's some people that have watched it so much, they just... playing on it, and they probably get some solid numbers. They have to. They keep going. You know, they're paying everybody $1 million bucks to record voices. So
yeah, but they also outsourced all the animation to like Thailand or something. So
nobody draws anymore, except for in Thailand.
Let's get on with the history, shall we?
Yes.
On this day in history for June 30th, 2021, this is the 181st day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 184 days left in 2021. How come June 30th isn't the halfway point? That's interesting. I guess July and August are long months. February was a short month, so maybe it balances out.
Yeah,
it's not a leap year.
No,
it was on this date in 1886 that the first transcontinental train trip across Canada departed from Montreal, Quebec. It arrived in Port Moody, British Columbia on July 4th. That's a long train ride.
Yeah, no kidding. June 30th, 1905, Albert Einstein sent the article on the electrodynamics of moving bodies, in which he introduced the special relativity for publication in Annalen der Physik.
Annalen der Physik.
Yeah.
Got to work on your German. It was also on this date in 1906 that the United States Congress passed the Meat Inspection Act and Pure Food and Drug Act.
There you go. Yep, it's meat.
It's fresh. Ship it.
On June 30th, 1908, the Tunguska.
You know, the Tunguska? Big boom. Tunguska.
Oh, the Tunguska, which we were just talking about the other week.
Yes, we were.
Tunguska event, the largest impact on Earth in human recorded history, resulted in a massive explosion over the eastern Siberia.
1908. Rewind the clock. I want to go back and see that.
No, you don't.
from several thousand miles from away.
From cool. a wilderness cam. You know, put a wilderness cam up there.
It's chapter one. It's strapped to one of those trees that fell over.
Yeah, the camera goes funk.
That was uneventful. Also today, in June 30th, 1937, the world's first emergency telephone number, 999, was introduced in London. Talk about wasting time for an emergency on a rotary phone. And the new number is 0800-999-811.
It was on this date in 1953 that the first Chevrolet Corvette rolled off the assembly line in Flint, Michigan.
June 30th, 1972, the first leap second was added to the UTC time system.
Hey, by the way, that Chevrolet rolled off the assembly line. Luckily, it didn't hurt anybody. It just
And the leap second went right over my head.
You.
Happy birthday goes out in this date to American actress, singer, and activist Lena Horne, born on this date in 1917.
And also born June 30th, 1919, American inventor of the modern hot air balloon, Ed Yost. Why didn't they call it the Yost-a-loon?
Yost-a-loon?
Or something like that.
Up, up and away in my beautiful Yost.
Yost-a-loon.
American biochemist and academic Nobel Prize laureate Paul Berg. I know a guy by the name of Paul Berg, but this wasn't him because this guy was born in 1926.
Yeah, I don't think it was the same guy. American magician and author Harry Blackstone Jr. was born 87 years ago today.
And American lieutenant and oceanographer Robert Ballard. Yes, that Robert Ballard. He was born today in 1942. We interviewed him years ago. Yes,
that's right.
He deeply appreciates this show. Get it?
Yeah, every time. Greek mathematician and academic Anastasios S. Phocas. Phocas! He's 69 today.
Amy Bowen just said, 99 Yost balloons go by. Winner! Winner right there.
Ding, ding, ding. Winner.
American computer scientist and programmer Lynn Jolitz was born today in 1961.
And last but not least, American-Canadian astrophysicist and academic Victoria Caspi is 54 today.
Listener birthdays this week include June 30th, Alexis Durand, 80 Dude, one of our patrons, Mike McBride on July 4th, and July 6th is Peter from Sweden. Apparently, he even saw to put some PII on here. 1982, which makes him 39? Yes, 39. My mathematics are correct. That's the way it was on this day in history for June 30th, 2021. Hey, and don't forget, if you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, I've got a button here that puts up a subtitle down there that says, go over to chuckchat.com/birthday, and we will give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. I know there's a number of you listeners that we haven't said happy birthday to that we would dearly like to pass on our thanks to you and appreciation. So go over to chuckchat.com/birthday, fill in the form. Could be next February, could be next week. We'll get you,
That's right.
So let's fade out the music. Stop the music. Stop the music! And I believe we have random news.
Good news, everyone!
All right. Zodiac Killer's final two ciphers claim to be solved by amateur sleuth. If you call that good news, okay.
Well, whatever Farnsworth.
Thanks, Farnsworth. Yeah, I had to make sure that all my Farnsworth stuff was intact. Well, from July 31st, 1969 to June 26, 1970, the Zodiac Killer sent four ciphers to the San Francisco Chronicle. It took 51 years for the remaining unsolved codes to finally be broken. In the 1960s and 70s, the Zodiac Killer terrorized Northern California. He left several clues in his wake, including a handful of coded messages. But for years, authorities and amateur sleuths have failed to crack the last of his unsolved ciphers. But now, Faisal Zarawi, an engineer in business and business consultant who lives outside of Paris, claims to have finally decoded the Zodiac Killer's final two unsolved ciphers called Z13 and Z32. Unimaginatively, for the number of coded characters each contains. One, he says, even reveals the killer's name. Lawrence K. a suspect in the original case. Quote, I was obsessed with it 24 hours a day. That's all I could think about, explained Zahrawi, and learned about the Zodiac Killer in a French magazine. Zahrawi set out to do what no one had done. Crack the final codes.
Dun, dun, dun.
In 1969 and 1970, he sent out four ciphers along with letters describing his crimes. The first sent out in July 31st, 1969 was cracked just a week later. Not much of a code.
Yeah.
It said,
big Latin.
I like killing people because it's so much fun, the cipher said, called Z408.
Sounds just like him.
It's much more fun than killing wild game in the forest because man is the most dangerous animal of all. You don't know what this guy sounded like. He might have sounded like that.
I don't know.
But it took 51 years for the codebreakers to crack the second cipher called Z340. In December 2020, an international team of codebreakers finally cracked Z340. That cipher, which was mailed to the San Francisco Chronicle with the victim's blood-stained shirt, mocked authorities. I hope you are having lots of fun trying to catch me, the Zodiac Killer wrote.
Make him sound like a Warner Brothers cartoon character.
I'm protecting the innocent. Well, he's not really innocent if he's the Zodiac Killer.
No, yeah. Mm-mm.
But despite the breakthrough, ciphers for Z13 and 32 remained unsolved because these ciphers are so brief, they're much harder to crack. It's like playing Hangman with three characters. Okay. And some believe they are impossible to solve because they're just too short to confidently determine an encryption key. That's where Zahrawi entered the picture. After reading about the case and the recent translation of Z340, Zahrawi set his sights on the final two ciphers. Why not me? He thought. So Zahrawi got to work. A graduate of École Polytechnique and HEC Paris, France's top engineering and business schools, Zahrawi focused his problem-solving skills on the coded messages. As he toiled, he suddenly wondered if he could recycle old work. The international code breakers who had solved Z340 had used an encryption key and released it in the public domain. Could lightning strike twice, even three times? First, Zahrawi applied the key to Z32. This yielded a random jumble of letters. Wah, wah. So Zahrawi tried several different techniques to find coherence in the chaos. And after 2 weeks, he suddenly had something. Labor Day, find 45.069 North, 58.719 West.
If we can only figure out what North means.
We can't decipher North. We must have had the whole code wrong.
This whole thing's nonsense.
Try it again. Yeah. So this is a fairly lengthy article. I'm not going to read the whole thing to you, but it is interesting because I don't know where you would begin with this. This would be a fun exercise if you were into ciphers.
Yeah, it would be. They get kind of complex. So I don't know. It'd be kind of crazy to try and I would not be able to pull it off.
They didn't have like AES 256 back then.
No. It just encrypt the message and you'll never see what it is.
I'd be screwing with the authorities and just send them a nonsensical message. I just wrote down a bunch of symbols.
Milk, bread, cheese.
Not even that coherent. Not even that coherent.
All right. Well, moving right along. Forget rockets. This insane space Eustaloon will start flying passengers into the heavens.
No.
In 2024. No, it's a space balloon. So a Florida company is now offering a different space flight experience than the rocket-based trips from Blue Orion and Virgin Atlantic and SpaceX.
Blue what?
Origin, excuse me. What did I say, Orion?
Yes.
I missed the first I there. And SpaceX. Space Perspective said that this last Friday's successful launch of the space balloon, Neptune 1, shows another type of space travel is possible, which I am intrigued. Unlike spacecraft aircraft-like capsules of other commercial firms, Neptune 1 will be more like a lounge, complete with Wi-Fi, toilet. Their Wi-Fi is going to the SpaceX internet, but toilet, bar, and that floats at 12 miles per hour into the stratosphere. The capsule can seat 8 passengers and a pilot. Everything is slow, gentle, and comfortable, says John Poynter, who founded the company with her husband, Taylor McCallum. You're not blasting into space on top of a rocket with the fury and vibration that it involves.
That's the experience.
Yes, but I would also argue this could be a fun to do as well. But anyway, let's continue.
It doesn't take 8 minutes to get up there, though.
No, it takes 6 hours and 37 minutes trip. Also, contrast against 11-minute space flight on a rocket. So does the price. Space Perspective opened up the ticket sales for the first commercial flight in 2024, $450,000, which, relatively speaking, is not too bad.
It's better than the $24 million. Yeah, to sit next to Bezos.
Well, Virgin Galactic initially planned to charge $250,000 for its first flight, and that number is expected to rise. While the third astronaut joining Jeff and Mark Bezos aboard the maiden July 2020 commercial Blue Origin flight paid $28 million for a seat.
Yes, he did. Well, that was an auction, too.
So maybe he can cancel and reschedule with on the balloon.
Yeah. I could get a whole lot of balloon rides for that price.
Yeah, I can go up 12 times this year. So Space Perspective plans to launch 3 flights per year. First from the Space Coast Spaceport in Titusville, Florida, and then the other locations around the U.S. and eventually international. The balloon doesn't go nearly as high as the other aircraft technically. Is not in space, but it floats up to 100,000 feet, about 19 miles compared to others, which briefly crossed the Karman line, 62 miles above the Earth. Mm-hmm. Researchers and scientists consider the Karman line the divider line between Earth's atmosphere and space. There, the tourist astronauts will experience weightlessness for several minutes, something that doesn't happen on Space Perspective's space balloon. Okay. So Poynter says the Neptune flight will be similar to other trips. The experience is indistinguishable from other commercial space tourism flights, he said. Exactly. We're not on top of a rocket, but you can see the full blackness of space and 450 miles in every direction of Earth, including all of Florida and into the Bahamas. The actual time at the 100,000 feet is nearly 2 hours. So you get some time up there, allowing plenty of time to enjoy the view.
Yeah, but Scott cool. Reynolds has a good point. It just doesn't have the same ring. Balloon man, burn it out, his fuse up there alone. No, it just doesn't work.
And get Elton John on the phone.
Yeah, and John Miller Jr. says, if I hear someone demand to see the manager while I'm on that flight, I'm opening the door and jumping out.
Yeah, I'm just done. No, I think it would be kind of cool to take a casual flight and see everything kind of fading away and then fading into the edge of space.
The price point especially, has to come down below 100K, though.
Especially if it has a full bar.
They better include drinks for that price.
I know.
That's the economy flight, because the $250,000 was the one that included. It was all inclusive.
Everybody, please. Yeah, the stewardess comes by, starts picking up drinks because we're getting ready to get in the edge of space. And
it's $150,000 base price. If you want to bring a suitcase, that's another $75,000.
Yeah. It doesn't include carry-on.
If you want to select your seat, that's another $15,000.
But both styles offer an exciting trip. Of course, on a rocket, like you've read about every astronaut that's gone into space, but this can be fun to experience with your family. You know, everybody's going up.
I want to see a couple of test flights go first, because a balloon typically goes up and there's going to be winds that drive you one way or another. When you get into space, there's no wind, but you've already been redirected by some winds, and then you start coming down and there's going to be
maybe they can direct it a little bit.
I don't know. So
yeah. It's got some fuel and some rockets.
How do you not come down in the Atlantic Ocean?
Well, hold on. Now, we've seen lots of people, even amateur astronomers, send up balloons, and they come down relatively close to where they're at, enough where they can go drive over and get it. I mean, they'd splash down in the ocean. I don't know how this works.
I don't know. I want to see some test flights first.
Yeah, I'm sure they. Oh no, we're landing in the middle of Miami. You know,
it's bad enough that we have all that space junk floating around up there, but now we'll have space poop.
Oh,
when they empty the toilet.
Yeah, it's time for us to descend. Okay, we're gonna clear out the.
What was the Sandra Bullock movie? Gravity?
Yeah.
Instead of getting hit by a whole bunch of nuts and bolts, eating pepper.
Crap. Ooh.
That's Gravity 2. Okay, the sequel. Another news story about security robots. When the Westland Real Estate Group bought Liberty Village, a sprawling 1,000-unit apartment complex on the northeastern edge of Las Vegas nearly 2 years ago, the police departments identified it as one of the city's most frequent sources of 911 calls. There's a little bit of everything, said Dina Lerner, a spokeswoman for Westland. A lot of gang activity that revolved around controlled substances, prostitutions, drug rings. We got it all. Come on in. It's terrific.
Yeah.
She said,
we had
issues with gun rings, drive-by shootings, robberies, assaults. We're talking everything. Everything's got to
come on down.
Low
it's
price
weekend.
Yeah. Pick up a crackhead.
Low prices this weekend only.
So earlier this year, Westland introduced a broader program to reduce crime and added an autonomous security robot manufactured by Nightscope, a Silicon Valley company, to make the complex safer. Each robot is given a nickname, and the one roaming around Liberty Village is called.
I'm waiting.
Not Casino McCasino Face.
Right.
It's called Westy. That's right. The model K5. Shame they didn't wait up for the K9. The K5 is a canonical, bulky, artificial intelligence-powered robot that stands just over 5 feet tall. Westy slowly roams around the human walking speed and has four internal cameras capturing a constant 360-degree view. It also can scan and record license plates and unique digital identifiers that every cell phone broadcast, known as MAC addresses. But it's unclear how much Westy has reduced crime at Liberty Village. The thing's probably all full of graffiti. Westy sucks.
Well, look, Westy's all right. And then on the back, he's, kick me.
You remember what happened to Hitchbot, kids?
Oh, yeah.
Got to the city of brotherly love.
Yeah, okay. And got some brotherly love.
Nightscope, which is eagerly trying to recruit new clients, told local news outlet that Westy had resulted in, quote, a significant drop in 911 calls, underscoring yet another crime-fighting win. Nightscope included articles about Westy as part of its recent pitch to individual investors and in its plans to take the company public. Officer Aiden Ocampo Gomez, a spokesman for the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, said that while the complex is no longer in the agency's top 10 list for the most 911 calls in the northeast part of Las Vegas Valley, he doesn't think all the credit should go to Westy. I cannot say it was due to the robot, he said. As more government agencies and private sector companies resort to robots to help fight crime, the verdict is out on how effective they are in actually reducing it. Nightscope, which experts say is the dominant player in this market, has cited little public evidence that its robots have reduced crime as the company deploys them everywhere from Georgia shopping malls to an Arizona development to a Nevada casino. Nightscope's clients also know how much these security robots help. They don't know how much these security robots help. Are we seeing dramatic changes since we deployed the robot in January? Lerner, the Westland spokesman, said, no. But I do believe it's a great tool to keep the community at large as this, a community as large as this, to keep it safer, to keep it controlled. Okay. If you've watched Love, Death, and Robots on Netflix, stay away.
Right.
I'm going to leave it there. We have more on that story if you want to read in further over at chuckchat.com/technorama. There it is. Episode 645. I had to first find the iPad somewhere in this nonsense. And wow, we're already down to, we don't have any Hacks and Strange stories. We can give a shout out to the chat room. We've got Scott Tyler and John Miller Jr. Hanging out there, along with a few other people. Haven't seen anybody on YouTube say anything, but they're out there. Amy, yes, Amy's out there.
Yeah.
So we've got a few.
He's counting all those Yoast balloons.
99 Yoast balloons. She's counting down. Lost my cursor again. We've got to get the windows back in the right door. Here we go. So with the shout out to the chat room, 9:30 Eastern time on Facebook and YouTube on Sunday nights. We will be here. We will have a couple of weeks off because I'm going to be traveling finally in July. Yes.
In a plane?
Yes, in a plane and seeing family and giving hugs. Yeah, it's a great thing. Foreign concept for a long time.
You're going to be hugging people on the plane, or are you talking about your family?
We did get to, probably. I'm so long. Hey. I miss travel so much. I love you people.
We had to eject you off the plane, sir.
we got to see Scott and his wife in church today. First time in a long, long time.
Very good.
But we have been out to eat a couple of times since then. Let's see. That's the chat room. Remember when? Must be this green button here. Yes, that's the one. Okay. I think it's your turn because I just did the security robots.
That's right. In the foothills of the Altai? Is that right? Altai Mountains. In the southern Siberia lies Denisova Cave.
Let me know when you're ready to trade.
I don't know. It is the only site in the world known to have been inhabited by the eponymous Denisovians. Denisovians? Is that
right? They were quite epidermis themselves.
And their close relatives, the Neanderthals. Which overlapped at times, and as well by some of the earliest modern humans have dispersed into the northern Asia. A new study pieces together the history of the site over the past 300,000 years from the fragments of ancient DNA that survived in the cave sediments.
Wow, DNA.
It's pretty amazing. Our findings reveal multiple turnovers of the archaic and modern humans during this period, as well as major changes in the diversity of other animals. We discovered the Denisovians were the earliest tool makers at the site, while Neanderthals were the sole human occupants between about 130,000 and 80,000 years ago. The first modern humans arrived much later in a car.
Flying car.
Yeah, in a Tesla. Now, the first modern humans arrived much later, just as the last Denisovians and Neanderthals were leaving the scene.
Oh, man.
We're out
of
here.
The Homo sapiens have moved in. We're out. There goes the neighbor. There goes the cave.
In the cave. We also detected marked changes in types of human and animal DNA around 200,000 and 100,000 years ago, coincident with major shifts in climate and environmental conditions. So, excavations in the cave by our Russian colleagues have unearthed about a dozen fossils of Denisovians and Neanderthals over the past 40 years, but none of the modern humans.
Hmm.
Rather, their presence of modern humans in the cave have been surmised based on recovery of artifacts made from stone, animal bone, teeth, and mammoth ivory, ostrich eggshells, marble and gemstones and snicker wrappers.
Cell phones.
Cell phones discarded in the corner.
Pagers. The pagers were from the Stone Age.
The pagers are discarded. Anyway, so the rarity of fossils at the site had also meant the questions persist about when different groups of humans occupied the cave. Which of them was responsible for making specific artifacts?
I say, was it the Denisovians or the Neanderthals who invented the printing press?
By the way, I like the way they spelled artifacts there.
Yes.
It's like theatre, you know, with the R-E or the E-R.
Could be a British article.
I know. I got it.
And license anyway, with an a C S. Well, I don't forget.
Right. Anyway, so again, this is also a very lengthy and detailed article, which you can go read for yourself and read about all the crap and trash they left, all these humans left behind.
What they left? How about what we're leaving behind? Imagine the joy future people will have digging in our trash, in our dumps. Because nothing's decomposing.
Little Johnny got an A on a
paper. What is a Nintendo?
Man, where does this E.T. cartridge come from?
There's a whole pile of them over here. We surmise that ancient humans used to use these as some sort of food device. We're not...
food.
E.T.
That's right. I wonder when we pretty much covered our bases in digging up stuff, you know.
There's always something to learn when you're digging up stuff.
I know. But I mean, you know, after some time in the future, I'm not talking like now, obviously, or 10 years, 20 years.
In the way year on down the road, 25.
When you think we've finally got, you know, kind of found everything?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Ever?
No.
In 100 years?
No.
Okay.
Think about all the dinosaur fossils that are still out there to be discovered. That are buried under layers and layers of rock that won't even be exposed in our lifetime.
Yeah, but we'll be dumping trash all over it, so it pushes it even further.
Good. Yeah, well, whatever. Let's go on to the next one at fizz.org.
I'm trying to be philosophical here. You're not helping.
When did this show turn philosophical? Wow. Maybe I'm going to jump out of that Yostaloon.
Were you not here in the last episode? I'm just kidding.
A cluster of comet fragments believed to have hit Earth nearly 13,000 years ago may have shaped the origins of human civilization. There we go. This is from a British thing. Civilization with an S.
Yeah. That's right.
Possibly the most devastating cosmic impact since the extinction of the dinosaurs, it appears to coincide with major shifts in how human societies organize themselves, researchers say. Was this responsible for the Younger Dryas? Wasn't that about 13,000 years ago? We'll find out.
Maybe.
The Ice Age was starting to retreat. Anyway, let's see. Blah, 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 blah. Where are they? Their analysis backs up claims that the impact occurred prior to the start of the Neolithic period, or the so-called Fertile Crescent in Southwest Asia. That's, you know, the Tigris and Euphrates, that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
During that time, humans in the region, which spans part of the modern-day countries of Egypt, Iraq, and Lebanon, switched from hunter-gatherer lifestyles to one centered on agriculture and the creation of permanent settlements. Careful, kids. This is where you might learn something from Technorama. Here we go. This is what I was talking about. It is thought that the comet strike, known as the Younger Dryas impact, also wiped out many large species and ushered in a mini ice age that lasted more than 1,000 years. That's a mini ice age, kids. A thousand years.
Mini. Yes, right.
We could use one about now. All right. Since it was proposed in 2007, the theory about the catastrophic comet strike has been a subject of heated debate and much academic research. Now, researchers from the University of Edinburgh have reviewed evidence assessing the likelihood that the impact took place and how the event may have unfolded. Heading, strong evidence. The team says a large... Oh, we're not supposed to read that part. The team
don't read
says
start
reading the banner ads on the side. The team says a large body of evidence supports the theory that a comet struck around 13,000 years ago. Researchers analyzed geographical data from 4 continents, particularly North America and Greenland, where the largest fragments are thought to have struck. Their analysis highlights excessive levels of platinum, signs of materials melted at extremely high temperatures, and the detection of nanodiamonds known to exist inside comets and form during high energy explosions. All of this evidence strongly supports the impact theory, researchers say. The team says further research needs to be done to shed more light on how it may affect global climate and associated changes in human population or animal extinction. Quote, this major cosmic catastrophe seems to have been memorialized on the giant stone pillars of the Göbekli Tepe, possibly the world's first temple, which is linked with the origin of civilization in the Fertile Crescent of Southwest Asia. Did civilization therefore begin with a bang? Says Dr. Martin Swetman, or a voice something like Dr. Martin Swetman's from the School of Engineering. They have a picture here that says archaeological site in Arizona, U.S., with distinctive black layer indicating substantial environmental change. Changes beginning around 10,800 BC with impact debris at its base. Cool. So there's definitely these distinctive layers in the soil with a distinctive divider between them. Sort of like when they show you the difference between the Cretaceous and the Triassic, yeah. And you see the KT layer and the iridium from, yeah. I like unraveling the mysteries of how we got here and what caused this stuff.
They had me at diamonds.
Micro diamonds. So you're going to have to save a lot of them.
Yeah. You got to go digging for, I found one. Oh.
Yeah. You dropped it again.
Yeah.
Don't put that in your ear or nose.
That's in the carpet.
Okay. That takes care of the Remember When. Now it's time to thank our wonderful patrons who support this show with as little as a dollar an episode and keep the show going.
They enable us.
Software upgrades, bandwidth. We don't talk about the paying of the staff or the drinking of the alcohol at conventions. Yeah, that's not your money.
I dropped ice cream on my keyboard today, so I need to get a new keyboard. I'll put in the rec chuck.
Okay, we'll see if that gets approved by the CFO. Not responsible for accidental damage. You signed the waiver when you became an employee. So we are at great thanks to people like Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown. We got to get Brian in the studio, which means I got to figure out how to hook up this studio for multiple people again.
No kidding.
Chris MC, Dandy Man Coyer, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, thank you very much. Gary Lindros, hope to see him at Dragon Con as well. Hope to see you all at Dragon Con, that'd be awesome. But I don't know if that's a reality thing. Harold McKinstry, John Clifford, John Noble, Jorga Schrawen, Christina, Kyle Nishioka, Leon, Mark Kilfoyle, Mike Wills, Chris Martinez, Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Weshey, thank you, Steve Therian, Steve Cody, and Steve London. All of these people were kind enough to go over to the Patreon page at patreon.com/technoramapodcast. And as I mentioned, a dollar a show. They support us. It's pennies out of your pocket. And you know what? In July, when we're not producing, you're not paying. How's that for a deal? But we do give you also an extra show to listen to. 15, 20 minutes usually, where Craig and I wax philosophically. That's the philosophical show. Save that philosophy nonsense for that. It doesn't belong in this show.
Right.
This is all, maybe you'll learn something from a couple of chuckleheads.
Yeah. I think it's more like maybe we'll make some sense somewhere else.
Because we're figuring out as much as they are.
That's right.
Okay. That takes care of our gratitude and thanks for our Patreon people as we move on to Pass the Remote, Craig.
Oh, where's it at? Oh, I left it downstairs in front of the TV.
That was a mouse.
Yeah. Hey, look, it even changed colors.
And you still hold it while I'm holding it. Illusion broken.
Wait.
Okay.
Sorry.
So what's on your TV or movie watching list right now?
Well, I had to bring this one up. I watched Fatherhood, which is on Netflix with Kevin Hart. And I have to tell you, that was really good. I didn't know exactly what to expect going in. I was like, but watching the trailer is like, okay, I don't think this is going to be a comedy. And it wasn't. And Kevin Hart really, he brought it. I thought he did a great job. It starts off the movie right at the beginning. You find out that his wife has passed away during childbirth right after childbirth. So he is not only dealing with that, but he's got a new daughter, and then he's got, you know, all the the kind of juggling that would happen with from that, you know, working from home, trying to work from home and try and juggle going to the office and the child and everything. And it was actually really good. There were some moments that really got me teared up a little bit, you know, as a father. And even Kim, she watched it and she said that it, you know, she was having to grab some tissues as well because some of the issues he was dealing with. And, you know, it strikes a chord with any parent, apparently, or obviously. So I would definitely recommend that
one. If they were able to evoke an emotional response, it was a good movie.
It was. And I usually don't have a lot of emotional responses, even at movies, but that was one. Yeah.
All right. I stumbled onto one Donna was watching called Why Women Kill.
Wait, I think she was watching as research.
Mm-hmm. So I came in at the end of season one, which is fine with me. I mean, there were like 12 shows and I came in at episode 10 or something like that. Wow. I was blown away, just completely blown away by the writing. I don't know what happened earlier in the season, but I'll tell you what happened at the end of season one without giving away the spoilers. The writers and the way they wove between three or four timelines was just fantastic. There was a storyline about one woman in the 60s who wanted to off her husband because of, you know, certain reasons. And then there was another one in the 80s. It was her husband, but she later found out that he was homosexual and he had AIDS and he had a boyfriend and he was going to die and he was watching his friends die off. So there's a situation there. And then there's another one in like the 2019s. And all of these, the cool thing was all of these people, it was all centered around the one house. And at the very end, they had this wonderful montage of how this all happened and what was going on in all of the timelines at once. So while the guy dying of AIDS is dancing with his wife one final dance before he still can, there's this knife fight and gun fight going on simultaneously all around them. The camera work and the storyline was just brilliant. I can't say how much I appreciate what the writers did and what the film crew did. It was just really, really well done. And now we're starting into season two. So they're starting out with a story of a woman in 1949 married, and she has discovered a secret about her husband. So this one seems to not be concurrent timelines, but concurrent stories within one time frame.
So, and do all the stories relate to each other or just because they're around the house?
It was around the house. And you find out later that like the lady in the 60s, as she got older, she sold it to the other lady in the 70s and she owned it for like 20 years. And then she sold it to the next people and the next people. So all of these people knew each other from the sale of the house. So they were all connected that way. They did meet at one point. So it was kind of a really cool connection that they had. So Why Women Kill, it's on Hulu if you look for it. I caught her watching it in passing going, what is this? And she goes, Why Women Kill. I'm like, oh, okay. But I don't know what, I must have been sitting on the couch with the laptop at some point and just kind of got realized I hadn't been working on the laptop for the last 45 minutes going, crap, sucked into another one.
Right.
John Miller Jr. says, he said, have the cat bring you the remote, Craig.
Oh, which one?
Or the dog. Okay. Juno!
No, she's in her natural state. She's sleeping.
That takes us to the end of our show where we have our question of the week. So we didn't mention how you can get in contact with us. We did have we didn't have any voicemail or email this time, but you can get in contact with us at 707-530-2428. 707-530-CHAT is the way you want to get in touch with us. Or send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. Wait a minute, didn't we have a voicemail? I thought I saw something come in, or was that?
I don't think so.
Okay, we will check. Apologies if we missed it. We've got one more show before we go for a short summer break, but we'll see if we can find that. But we do have to record our Patreon show before we go, or before we completely sign out. And our question of the week for you this week is, what movie can be completely spoiled by a very small piece of information? I am your father.
I don't know. I was trying to think of something of the Matrix.
No. Batman is really Bruce Wayne.
Oh, spoiler alert.
Yes.
Okay, let's wrap the show up.
Oh, you're not going to give the spoiler alert?
Spoiler alert. I did say that.
Okay. So all you have to do is think of what spoiler alerts are out there. That's our question of the week. Let's wrap this up with...
Well, that was a lame ending to the show, by the way.
It really kind of fell flat. But the music makes up for it, right?
Yeah, right. Okay. Sure, whatever.
Let's get out of here since we've clearly outlasted the usefulness of this one.
Right.
Step over to our website, chuckchat.com/technorama. Find out in the show notes. Go over there and find all the other shows, the articles that we talked about. There's some great pictures, by the way, and some videos that you want to check into. Again, if you want to get a hold of us, 707-530-2428. You can find us there. What else we got? We've got Topic is Trek podcast that we do. So with Clinton Alvord. Yeah. So if you're into Star Trek, you might want to check that out. TheTopicIsTrek.com. Sorry, it was in the background there.
Yeah.
We've also got Podcasting for Dummies. I'm working on getting the next episode out for that, but podcastingfordummies.com. Craig, give us a binary high five.
All right. 101. See you in a couple weeks, I guess.
Next week.
Oh, after that. I'm sorry.